I would say spend your time networking and building relationships is number one. Number two, spend your time, I would say, for a lot of roles, increasing your visibility online.
This is Chan with The Plan, the podcast, a podcast providing career advice and easy, actual steps for frustrated professionals, helping you overcome career challenges so you stop feeling confused and defeated and start feeling focused and confident in order to excel in your career. I'm your host, Max Chan. Now let's dive into the episode. Hey, Kelsey, welcome to the show.
Hey, Max. Thanks for having me.
How's your Friday?
It's going really good. It's we're at the end of Friday, which is great for me. So looking forward to the weekend.
There's probably some job seekers out there that are frustrated that weekend's coming because then there's less job opportunities out there, right? Because there's no postings on the weekend. So from your experience so far this year, where do you see like the job market right now? And what are professionals reaching out to you feeling at this current moment?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, it's a mixed bag, but I will say that it's taking a while for folks to find a job. It's not uncommon that I'm working with clients for 4, 5, 6 months sometimes to find a role. So the market is a little bit slow. We've had a lot of tech layoffs still in the beginning of the new year. We always have like kind of a spike in applications in the new year, right? A little bit more activity, a little bit more hiring. But at the same time, with like a flood of layoffs, it feels very mixed. And I think like, people definitely come to me most of the time frustrated, most of the time very disheartened with the market, feel like they've been working really hard, feel like they've tailored their resume 100 times and they're not getting the progress that they want. So yeah, I think it's a little tough out there.
So your pitch, so to speak, is you're going to help professionals get their dream job without applying hundreds of times, right? In terms of like tailoring the resume for every single application, you have a system or solution that can help them get their dream job without having to apply a lot of times online, tailoring their resume for each application. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think that yes, I can help people get their dream job without applying hundreds and hundreds of times, but that's through like an intentional practice, right? Like that's definitely through a system of intentionality. But yeah, I think that there's definitely a way to do that.
So before we dive deeper into that, why don't you tell my audience more about your background in HR recruiting and career coaching?
Yeah. So I actually started my career in social work, which was a totally different career pathway for me. Burnt out of that career and made a pivot into workforce development. Worked with the U.S. veteran population, the homeless population, and the refugee population to help them identify roles in the market and collaborate with local employers to create employment pathways. So that's where I kind of got my background when it comes to HR, when it comes to recruiting and hiring and developing employment pipelines. And then I went to work for Arizona State as a career coach. I worked with the undergraduate and MBA population there. And then I started my own career coaching business about 2 years ago and have been doing that for full time since.
And is your clientele still people in school or getting their MBA, or has it changed since you've been doing your own practice for the past couple of years?
Yeah, in my own practice, I primarily work with early to mid-career still, but job seekers across industries, a lot of career transitioners, a lot of folks going from out of education or out of social work or out of nonprofit government space and into corporate. So yeah, big transitions, early to mid-career.
And throughout your career in the HR space, what has been the trends or changes of the job market from, let's say, a couple of years pre-COVID, let's say 2018 to 2019, and then COVID 20 to, I think, 21, and then now? Like, what's the difference between those three phases? Those are pretty significant phases, even though they're a short period of time. But what have you seen in terms of changes in the job market that people who are looking for jobs should be aware of?
Yeah, I've been coaching for like 10 years, right? Like I've been helping job seekers for a long time. And there's so many trends and things that like come in and out and go from like pre-COVID to during COVID when we had like the Great Resignation and like that sort of stuff. And we had like mass hiring. And then now we've got kind of this like mixed bag sort of market. So, I mean, the trends change all of the time. I would say the big thing for job seekers is to, I hate to say this, but like, don't pay too much attention to the trends. Like, the market comes and goes in and out, like, and you have to be able to put your trust in like a method that works for you and a strategy that works for you, and not be so overly concerned with like what's going on in the market as a whole. Like, of course, we're going to see like increased rates of networking is really going to be important in this market or in any market where there is like a large saturation of job seekers. So there's going to be, I guess, some different trends. You know, you're not going to see like way back in the day when we used to go in person and hand out resumes to people. Like, everything is an online application now. You have to think about keyword optimization on your resume now more than you ever have. You have to think about, a networked process now. You have to think about a personal brand and an online image now more than you probably ever have. So those are, I think, maybe some of the things to be more thoughtful of in today's market than we used to have to kind of be thoughtful of in years prior.
Yeah. And going back to the keyword optimization, like, there's always this battle of like, oh, I got to pass the screening software, the ATS. Let me go on this free platform to review my resume. Oh, my keyword rank is this. I got to stuff my resume with more keywords. What's your thoughts on that in terms of like keyword optimization, but still make it authentic, but not trying to see if you can game the system?
Yeah, I don't believe in gaming the system. In my experience using an ATS platform, there is not... You do not need to, there's no robots like scanning resumes and saying, oh, this resume has the most keywords, so this is who's getting called, and this resume doesn't have as many keywords, so this is not who's getting called, right? You do want to optimize to the job description. Obviously, you want your resume to be relevant, and you want to have keywords from the job description, just because those are going to be keywords that when recruiters are parsing through resumes that they're going to be searching for. If you're a recruiter and the hiring manager tells you, I need somebody with 3 years of Tableau, then I'm going to go through and search for Tableau on resumes and make sure that I am seeing that on the resume, right? You know, so that's where like a keyword, like a hard skill needs to be listed. A keyword needs to be on there. You can't assume that somebody knows you know Tableau just because you were a data analyst. But I am not of the mindset that you need to use some of those free sites that do the scanning and the keyword optimization. I don't think that those are helpful. I think that they're almost predatory in some sense and make job seekers become overly stressed about stuffing their resume with keywords. And that is not the most time efficient thing to do. So I would say, yes, tailor to the job description. And do you need to tailor every single resume? Maybe. It kind of depends on how similar two jobs are that you're applying to. But do you need to do like a mass keyword overhaul? Probably not. You know, and I would say, don't get caught up in the LinkedIn creators or other folks who are sort of putting out there that the ATS, you'll never get seen if you don't have X amount of keywords or that sort of thing. That's where I fall on it from my experience using an ATS. You know, I didn't do high volume recruiting, so I don't know. But, you know, in my experience, there's no magical robots on the ATSs that I have used.
Going back to what you said about being time efficient. If a job seeker has limited amount of time, where would they focus their efforts on?
I always say that, you know, I like to tell job seekers to use like a dual pronged approach. So you want to think about utilizing your standard classic reactive approach. Apply to jobs that you see online, spend the time doing the applications, that sort of thing. You also want to utilize a proactive approach. So you want to kind of have both of these approaches going at the same time. And your proactive approach is going to be relationship building with people at your target companies. I have seen relationship building be so successful for so many people. And I hesitate to say like the word networking, but networking, you know, or whatever, building relationships with people at your target companies and spending more time in conversations than in applications, spending more time focused on identifying relationships with people who are influential in your field, people who are decision makers at the companies that you're applying to, and spending that time building those relationships and doing sometimes a soft pitch, so to speak, to those people on your qualifications, you know, and helping people to see how you are qualified for the role. So I would say spend your time networking and building relationships is number one. Number two, spend your time, I would say, for a lot of roles, increasing your visibility online. So spending time on LinkedIn, spending time increasing visibility on there, on that platform, can be really helpful for a lot of different industries. And then third is applying. What happens to a lot of job seekers, right, is they spend a ton of time on the job board. They spend all their time on the job board. And then a ton of time, hours and hours are wasted on the job board without building those relationships that end up leading to interviews.
Well, you mean increasing your visibility online? Do you mean going on LinkedIn and optimizing your profile? Do you mean creating your own content, commenting?
Yeah. So I think all of those things are great ways to increase your visibility. I don't think that job seekers need to be LinkedIn content creators. I don't think that that's a prerequisite for a successful job search. But I do think that content creation on LinkedIn can be a very powerful tool, but is a long game. It's not something that happens overnight. You've got to put in the consistency to get that machine going. So for job seekers who are looking for a quick turnaround, content creation is not necessarily the fastest game. But over a career, is content creation a successful strategy? Absolutely. It can bring you all kinds of opportunities to demonstrate your expertise. So if you're thinking about it from a longer career perspective, content creation is great. And then if you're just doing job search and you're I don't want to buy into the content creation thing, then increase your visibility by commenting. Commenting is a super easy and effective way to increase your visibility. You don't have to create your own content. And comment on people's content who are experts in your industry or relevant in your industry, people who are cool and interesting to you. You know, spend time commenting thoughtful comments on their content to bring about more visibility to your profile. And then lastly, like you were saying, obviously, as you're bringing people into your profile, you want an optimized profile. So make sure your profile is as optimized as possible, that you've got good language on there, that you've got good graphics on there, that sort of thing.
And going back to networking, I'm sure you've also had this experience with clients where they don't want to do networking. They're, for whatever reason, that they're scared to reach out to people online. So from a mindset perspective, how do you help them ease into networking and make them comfortable, in a way, cold calling on LinkedIn or via their work email, if you go that approach?
Yeah, I think that it is a process. What I try to do with clients who are really nervous about it is I try to provide a safe opportunity to practice first. So I will have them connect with one of my contacts. I'll say, oh, here's one of my friends or whatever who will do an informational interview with you that's in your field. And I'll try to provide them one of my contacts so there's a warm handoff. I would also say warm network first, right? Are there people in your network that you already know, family, friends of friends, old colleagues, that sort of thing that you can kind of get your feet wet and there's lower stakes, lower pressure? That's another thing too, is don't start with trying to get an informational interview with the CEO. Do something that's lower stakes if you're nervous, right? Do something, connect with a peer, connect with somebody who you feel comfortable with, that you have some interest in their background. Start with the baby steps. I think when it comes to mindset, I think that you've got to know and understand when it comes to connecting with people that not everyone's going to get back to you. And that's a normal part of the process. And that's okay. People are busy or they're uninterested. And I think that goes into lots of bigger mindset topics when it comes to job search there's a lot of stuff you can't take personal in job search. There's a lot of stuff that if you take it personal, rejections and that sort of thing, it will hit your ego. And there are disappointments along the way in job search and in networking. And, you know, when it comes to mindset, I think you've got to build a strong foundation for yourself so you don't take as many things personal and, you know, kind of work through some of the networking scaries with baby steps.
Speaking of rejection, one of the, I guess, maybe myths or of programming, so to speak, is like, why would people want to talk to me? If I'm DMing someone at a company, they think, oh, this guy just wants a job, right? That's the mindset they have. It's coming from like a place of like taking. So they don't feel comfortable reaching out because this guy's probably just, or this girl's just probably reaching out to me because I work at this company that they want to be at and they just are asking me for a job, right? So is that the real mindset that these professionals at these companies are thinking when someone cold reaches out to them? Or what is the real truth in terms of what they're thinking when someone reaches out to them?
Yeah, so I think that's such a good question. Sometimes there are people who think that, right? Like, I don't think that that's false. That's the exception, not the rule, I think. I genuinely, through my experience, having done a lot of cold networking, a lot, and I'm sure you've done a lot too, right? Like, through that experience, I have found an overwhelming majority of people to be kind and interested if they get back. If they don't get back, they don't get back, right? And that happens. But if they get back, most people, as long as your message to them is authentic and is about them and demonstrates that you read their profile, that you care about connecting with them, that you've made it personal, most people, in my experience, are open to connecting. And if anything, flattered that somebody reached out to them. I always find it flattering when somebody reaches out to me and says, oh, I'd love to connect with you and learn more about your career. It's like, ooh, but you have to position it that way. You can't position it like, hey, I'd love to connect with you because I want to work at your company. You know, or I'd love to connect with you because you have a job and you're hiring for it. There's different ways, you know, there's different ways to message for different things. But I would say that there's more people who are open than there are people who are going to get the ick from your messaging, I think.
Do you recommend connecting with someone and then DMing them? Or do you think it's better to find the work email and email them? Like, what's the better approach?
Yeah, I think the work email is better if you can. But if they're an active user on LinkedIn, then LinkedIn can be great. Connection first with a note and then a message if you can. I know the connection notes, there's only like 5 a month or 10 a month or whatever it is. So there's not a whole lot of opportunity to do that. But connection with a note, then a message is the key on LinkedIn if they actively use LinkedIn. If they don't, I think that the email is a great opportunity because you get way more characters, you get way more opportunity to have a more meaningful conversation. And somebody who's not active on LinkedIn, like, you can use LinkedIn to source that person, find them, and then try to get their work email and email them that way. And I think that's a pretty effective strategy.
Do you have any tips on finding a work email? Like, for me, what I try to do is, like, if I can find one person's email at the company, usually, like, it doesn't even matter if it's a small company, usually they have like an email pattern. So for example, like, a big company might be like firstname.lastname@company.com. So if you can find one person's email that is that structure, it's a good chance that the person you're trying to reach out to has the same type of email. But in your experience, what has worked for you in terms of finding a work email for a client of yours that wants to work for the specific company that they're after?
Yeah, that's exactly what I tell my clients to do, is the same, is if you can find out the naming convention and how they structured those emails. So use like hunter.io or Rocket Reach or something like that. Those are great websites to identify the naming convention of the emails and then shoot some out and test it out, see what's out there. I think that those are kind of the best ways. Also, I would just say Google the person's name. See if you can find their email that way. Sometimes it's listed on an event or some other list for something that they did, or, you know, something that they sent out. And then if it's a smaller company, definitely go on the company website and take a look, because smaller companies, nonprofits, that sort of stuff, a lot of times they list like staff directories and things like that. And you can find people's emails really simply that way. So I would say, you know, if it's a big company, think about the naming convention, just like we were talking about. And if it's smaller, like, go onto the company website, do some Google searches, that sort of thing.
And then to recap, like, the message shouldn't be about like trying to work for the company. It's more about like trying to get to know more about them as a person, about their career, and then about the company, right? And then when you have a conversation with them, they're probably going to ask you, oh, what made you want to reach out, or why are you interested in this company anyway, right? So, but the lead off should be about them first, and then they tend to reciprocate after.
I tell my clients that it's a fangirl message, to write a message that's like, I stumbled upon your profile or whatever, and I am a fan. You don't have to say that exactly in those terms, but you want it to be about them and your interest in connecting with them because of some of the work that they have done or something about them that's interesting or a mutual connection that you have. You don't want to lead off with the job unless they're a hiring manager and you already applied to the role. You already applied to a role, that's like a different type of message, I think. That's like a solution-focused message where you're saying, hey, I wanted to introduce myself. I applied to the role. Here's three things about me. I'd love to be considered. Thank you. That's like that message. But like a classic networking message, like I'm just trying to get to know somebody who maybe works at one of my target companies and maybe has a job for me in the future. And I'm just trying to build my network. Those are like a fangirl message to me. Those are that type of message that's like very focused on that person. Everyone knows, it's like an unsaid thing. Everyone knows that you're looking for a job still. So you don't need to like come out there and be like, hi, I'm looking for a job. Make it about them so that you can get on the call with them and then ask towards the end of the call, hey, how might I best position myself for a role at this company in the future? Do you have any suggestions for me? Ask some type of question like that towards the end of the call to kind of get your feelers out there.
You mentioned earlier that this job market is a bit rough. It's taking a bit longer than usual to land these jobs that your clients are targeting. What do you do with your clients to help them stay motivated when it doesn't look promising?
Yeah, that's a good question. So all of my clients use a tracker, and in the tracker, there's a section for wins, and we'll go through and identify even like the smallest wins, like someone got back to my email, someone, you know, my outreach message worked, I got an interview, all the little wins. So counting and tracking those little wins and reflecting and celebrating those little wins really helps. I think the other thing that really helps is connecting with other job seekers. That can really help motivate you as having a community of support, other people who are in the same position as you. Because then when you experience rejection, you feel like you're not alone. Then when you experience like the emotional roller coaster of job search, you feel like you're not so isolated. You've got other people who are in the same boat as you, who are going through the same experience, and can offer that support to you. So I would say, like, as important as it is to connect with people who work at your target companies, it can also be just as important to connect with other job seekers and have accountability. And that's where things like coaching can really help to keep you motivated too, because you've got the accountability from coaching, you've got the support, you've got the cheerleading aspect of it. You know, you've got that additional care from somebody who's paying attention to your job search.
Yeah, having a career coach or being in a community of job seekers will help you stay motivated, because like if you're just by yourself, like you tend to be able to procrastinate if things don't go well, right? But if you have a coach and you're paying for the coach, they're going to hold you accountable, and that will actually increase your productivity, because you don't want to like a couple of weeks later say, oh, how's your job search going? And you haven't applied to anything, because then there's that sense of embarrassment.
Right, exactly. Accountability can work wonders for a lot of people. And you know, a lot of the people that I talk to, like when I do discovery calls with folks who are interested in coaching, I always mention, you know, yes, coaching is about expert advice, but it's also really about accountability. Like it's not just about like, oh, I need advice in my pocket from somebody. It's also, you know, it's about support and it's about encouragement and those sort of things. And that's a part of what you're paying for when you get coaching, at least with most coaches.
At least with you, right?
Yeah, at least with me.
Just diving into the coaching more in detail. So one of the things you also do is helping professionals be unstuck in their career and give them some clarity. So what are some of the common frustrations that professionals are reaching out to you in terms of like, why do they feel stuck?
Yeah, a lot of people feel stuck from burnout. They feel exhausted from work that they've done. They just don't have like the mental capacity to navigate a next move. There's fear, there's uncertainty, there's sometimes lack of knowledge on how to navigate a next move. So a lot of people come to me like stuck in that place. Like, I know I want out, but I don't know what I would want to do. Or like, I know I want to work in maybe one of these three fields, but I don't know which one, and I don't know how to figure out which one I want. So a lot of that stuff is like working through, are you in a place where you want to pivot? What degree of change do you want to make? Do you want to make like a 180 complete change in your career? Or do you want to just make, you know, like a little 20% change where we maybe just switch the company and a little bit about the role? So a lot of the work that I do when it comes to clarity is focusing on what elements and aspects of the stickiness can we augment or change for you so that you can get unstuck. And then once we get kind of clear, then navigate a successful job search.
One of the biggest fears that I've heard is that when they want to make a career pivot, there's a fear that they have to start over, which means like lower salaries and start from the beginning. I'm assuming that you had that fear when clients or professionals reach out to you. Well, what are some of the things that you tell them in terms of like the fear of having to start over from like a salary or title perspective?
It can really depend on the industry if you need to fully start over. But a lot of times you don't need a full start over. Let's say you're, I don't know, a director level at a nonprofit or a program manager. You could go to a lateral project manager in corporate, and that's going to be a huge pay bump for you if you're going from nonprofit. And that's going to be a lateral title. So I don't think all pivots are necessarily pivots that require you to go down to a lower salary. So that's one thing I think is kind of like a misconception about pivots. But the other thing is, in some cases, yes, if you're doing a pivot from, I don't know, something that's a big 180 pivot from nursing into computer engineering, yes, you are going to have to start at the bottom or close to the bottom because you just don't have, that's a 180 pivot that's completely different. So I think it's also about like thinking longer term too, about like, what does the career trajectory look like in the industry that you're going into? And is the earning potential higher over time? And can you handle a year or two at the lower salary or the lower title, so that you can reap the benefits later on in your career? And a lot of people are willing to take the cut if they know that the earning potential is higher overall. So yeah, I think those pivots, you know, especially if you're doing something like nursing and you're burnt out from it and you want to make a pivot like that, you know, I think that people are willing to start at something that is lower sometimes in order to get their foot into the door.
And from a resume or LinkedIn perspective, like how would someone position their skills and experience in a transferable way that makes sense for that new role that they're trying to pivot to?
Yeah, I think it's all about demonstrating transferable skills, right? Like, so a big piece is like, you've got to identify everything that you have done that has transferability and then utilize the language of the new industry to describe it if you can. You know, there are going to be things that don't transfer very well, but like, you know, a popular pivot is like education, teaching to customer success. Super popular pivot, right? In that pivot, you've got to take all of that classroom work and talk about it in a way that is more focused on the way you guide students is similar to the way that you are going to guide customers and customer success. So it's about demonstrating the pivots and utilizing the language so that the reader understands the transferability. You've got to, I always say, like, you have to spoon feed recruiters. You have to really spoon feed these like types of situations. Anything that you feel is assumed, you should just not, you should never make any assumptions about assumptions. You should always explicitly lay things out. And so I find that it's about identifying the transferable skills and identifying the language to use. And then utilizing that throughout all of your documents and throughout the way that you talk about your personal narrative. And that can be really challenging when you've been in something like education for a long time, because the only terminology you know is students and that sort of work. And it can be a challenge. So you've got to really immerse yourself and learn about the field that you're going into and how to talk about it.
Just a quick add-on about recruiters. When it comes to networking on LinkedIn, do you recommend reaching out to recruiters? I always hear recruiters get bombarded with tons of messages, so it's hard to get a hold of them. Or do you recommend reaching out to people that, for example, the hiring manager or people at the company that are in your field of expertise?
I think you should message both. I think don't expect anything from recruiters, though. I think it's okay to send them a message. If the recruiter creates content, by all means, engage with their content as much as you can and then send them a message. So you're adding value to them first and they'll recognize your name potentially. And then you might get a little bit more luck with a recruiter messaging you. And never send a recruiter, you know, the message of like, hey, do you have any jobs for me? Like, always send a recruiter a message that's very concise related to the one rec that they are responsible for and that you applied and you're tipping them off. So a message to a recruiter always needs to be a favor to the recruiter, never an ask. But it can be a lot more effective and more strategic to talk to the hiring manager or to talk to peers in that space who can maybe refer you to the hiring manager, that sort of thing. And so I like to fish around, you know, related to decision makers in that space and try to identify those folks and message them. And it seems to go a lot farther. They're much more willing to get back to you.
I know you and I don't have a crystal ball in terms of like the 2024 job market. We're talking in February. This will get posted like end of February, early March. What are your predictions or what are you seeing in the current job market for the next few months for people who are out of work or they're looking to make a career move now?
You know, I would just say that kind of like what I said before, there is no perfect time to make a career move. It's going to come down to like even in the Great Resignation when people were making all those career moves and it felt like, oh my gosh, this is possible, you know, and there was maybe a little bit more freedom to make some of those jumps. Even in those types of markets, you still need to be cautious. You still need to be thoughtful. And so I would just say like it comes down to where you are at personally and professionally, whether or not you want to throw your hat into the ring. And I'll say this, like the more proactive you are in general, the more you network as a practice in your career and not as a job search strategy, but as a longevity practice, the more you do that, the more you're prepared to enter the market, no matter what the market looks like. If you're thinking about going into the job hunt, start before you're ready, like start now, start yesterday, preparing your documents and preparing your network and getting your feelers out there so that when you do enter the market, you've got some momentum.
Going back to the networking thing, like the phrase is always like, you need to network before you need it. Because when you need it, it's going to be harder. Like people will feel that desperation. So it's better right to network when you already have a job or you don't need a job, so to speak. And then you build a relationship. So then when the time does come, you can leverage that network at that point.
Exactly.
So again, I really appreciate you taking the time, Kelsey, to come on my podcast to talk about like career, job search, how to pivot the job market. People want to reach out to you to learn more about what you do and how you can help them. What's the best way to do that?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn, Kelsey Watt with one T, or you can find me at my website, which is tgimcareers.com. TGIM stands for Thank God It's Monday, because it's all about finding jobs that get you back to loving your Mondays. So that's where you can find me.
That's a great phrase. Like everybody's like, oh, thank God it's Friday or happy Friday. But like, again, it's one of those things that you don't want to work in a toxic environment for 5 days, just enjoy two, right? It's about like exactly enjoying the Monday because you're looking forward to that work week coming up.
Yep. And that's what I say every Monday morning. It's TGIM.
Sounds good. Again, appreciate the time, Kelsey, and have a great weekend.
Thanks, Max.
Thank you so much for listening. And if you found this content valuable, here's three ways I can help you achieve your career goals for free. First, subscribe to this podcast as I post 2 episodes a week. Number 2, leave a 5-star review as this helps build the credibility of the show so we can gain access to more influential people to interview and bring those lessons to you to help elevate your career. And number 3, connect with me on social media. There's a link in the show notes for you to click on that compiles all my active social media accounts, making it easy for you to find me and connect with me. Thank you again for listening, and until next time. We'll be right back.